Hey everyone, this is Josh, host of the Urban Valor Podcast. Today's guest is Marine Gunnery Sergeant Leticia Garcia. Leti was born and raised in Anaheim, California, up until she was 6 years old. She and her family moved to Mexico and returned to the States when she was 13. When she was a senior in high school, her father lost his job and fell into a deep state of depression. It inspired her to enlist in the Marine Corps to help her father. During her enlistment, Leti fell in love with recruiting duty because it allowed her to change the lives of young adults. At one point, Leti's brother was diagnosed with cancer. It was one of the most challenging times of her life, faced with having to do her duty as a Marine while having to take care of her brother at the same time. If you enjoyed this episode, go give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment to help support our veterans. The bigger the community, the bigger the impact. If you'd like to contribute your story to Urban Valor or know anyone else who may, reach out on Instagram at Urban Valor TV, or you could email me at josh@urbanvalor.com. Enjoy the show.
So my name is Leticia Garcia. I'm serving currently active duty for the United States Marine Corps. Currently, my job is I'm the staff NCIC for Santa Ana. So I recruit out of Santa Ana City. I was born in Anaheim. I was raised in Anaheim for a little bit until I was 6 years old. When I turned six, around that time, my parents were on the verge of my sisters getting taken away. So my dad made a decision to send us to Mexico. So we went to Mexico and I was like six. And that's where I lived until I was like 13. So my dad used to be really strict on us. I think until this day, he's still pretty strict. But he was really strict on my sisters and myself, obviously, for the girls. And my sisters were doing a lot of bad stuff. Like ditching school, dating gangsters, especially. Anaheim was a big, back then, was pretty dangerous with gangsters. And my dad used to beat the boyfriends. And so obviously my sister used to, you know, also get beat up because she was doing the wrong things. And so my sisters got taken away one time and I was like around two. I don't remember a lot. But I just remember that around two, like we used to go see them. And then my sisters were given back to my parents. And then my sisters started doing the same thing again. And then CBS was called and they were on the verge of them getting taken them away. So my dad sent us with my grandma down in Mexico. My dad grew up working. Like his parents kicked him out at 14 years old. And ever since then, he was just working. The way I grew up, my dad didn't drink. My dad didn't do drugs or anything like that. So for him, I believe it was like a disrespect that my sisters were doing the stuff that they were doing because he came to this country to do better. And unfortunately, that's not what they were doing. And yeah, he was very protective over us, especially the girls. Like Mexican culture, I think men are very, not possessive, but I would say very prideful, and they always protect the girls, and that's how I grew up. My dad used to be the man, and he used to be stricter on the woman than my brothers and sisters. Initially, you know, me going at 6 years old to Mexico and then having a new culture, you know, that was shocking to me because I was learning English, and I was, you know, on the verge of, like, you know, being bilingual. So going to Mexico, then that stopped. So I couldn't learn English fully because now I was in Mexico and I was going to Mexico school. So when I came back, my biggest thing was I didn't know English. So I started at middle school when I came back. And it was a big issue because from here, I didn't know the language. And it was like a big shocker because this is my country and I couldn't speak the language. So growing up in high school and like middle school, you get bullied, you know, especially kids are mean all the time. So my biggest thing is like I was very shy growing up because I didn't know how to speak English. And when I did learn, it was a bit intimidating to speak it because people would make fun of you. So initially, I wasn't going to go into the Marine Corps. I was going to go to college. My dad was very strict on that. He wanted us to have a future, and since obviously he didn't have the opportunity to go to school, it was big for me and my little brother who are born here to make something out of themselves. So my original thought was to go to college, and that's what I was going to do. When my senior year hit, my dad lost his job. He got laid over, and he went into this depression, like very, very sad depression. Like, he let himself go. He didn't want to work. He got into food stamps, and that was like a big hit for him, because he's a prideful man. So when he got into food stamps, that even it got worse. So I was in JROTC for like my 4 years of high school. So I already knew like the military was going to pay for my college. And I wanted to help out my dad as fast as I could. And so I decided to join the military because of that. So surprisingly, my dad had no issues of me joining, because his biggest thing is my sisters left home when they were 16. Both of my sisters, they left home when I was 16, when they were 16, and they left with their boyfriends. So I was growing up, and my dad was a lot stricter to me. He didn't let me do anything. He didn't let me even go to the library. He didn't even let me like go see a Twilight movie. Like, it was big then, and Twilight was just coming out, so he wouldn't let me even go to the theater. If you asked me, hey, what city are you from, and can you tell me where's the restaurant? I couldn't even tell you, because everything was from school to the house, and either I was with him or I was at home. So when I came back and said, hey, I'm joining the military, my dad had no issues, because the only thing he told me was like, as long as you're not leaving with a boyfriend, I'm okay with it. My mom, she was the one struggling with the decision, because she says that back then she said that the military was for males. I feel like for my recruiter, it was pretty easy. I went into the library. He was there. And I told him I wanted to join the Marine Corps. Now, at that point, I wasn't very physically fit. So my recruiter took me. I did the ASVAB. Uh-huh. And the first time I failed it. And then I studied for maybe 2 months. I studied. And every day I'll have flashcards and like study the ASVAB book. So I'll study for 2 months, and then he finally came back and took me again, and then I passed ASVAB. Now I was working on my physical fitness. Like I said, my dad was really strict, so he didn't let me go to the pole functions or the PTs at the office. So my dad got like a secondhand treadmill, and he was like, all right, well, you want to join the military? Here, you're going to start training here. And I did, and I feel like I was pretty easy for my recruiter, because, you know, my dad had instilled that discipline in me. I couldn't tell you who my recruiter is, to be honest. I just know that I didn't see him often, because obviously, like, I didn't go to office as often. But it was pretty easy for him. Like, I wanted to do this. But like I said, my dad was very against me having a boyfriend because of my sister's leaving at 16. He wanted me to have a future and not depend on any man or anybody for me to be successful. My sisters, not that there's something wrong with being a housewife, because it's not, or a mom, it's not. It's just my dad didn't want that for me, which when I was younger, I didn't understand how come I was the one paying for other people's mistakes. But I'm glad, because, I mean, here I am today. My sisters... So when they left, we were in Mexico. My very first sister, she left when we were in Mexico. So she left with her boyfriend, and then she had kids. And then now she's in Chicago with 4 kids. My other sister, we got back here, and then she left when she was 16, when we were already here. She has 2 kids, and she got really heavy into drugs. And my dad tried to help her and took her in a bunch of times. And then it was just, you know, at some point, she got to want him more than we do.
Yeah.
And the 2 kids are with their dad. But no, they never came back. I remember getting picked up to go to MAPS, and then we went to San Diego, and I started crying. It was the very first time that, you know, I'm not home. And I was like, I'm very a family person. And it was a shocker for me to even stay at a hotel. So I remember crying and trying to regret what I was doing because, you know, I was like, I don't know if this is the right decision. And especially back then when I joined in 2010, all females used to go to Paris Island. So I had to fly from San Diego to Paris Island. Mind you, it was my first flight. Like, I've never gone out of hometown, and it was my first flight. So I was very scared. So when I got to the hotel, I met this girl. Her name is Celise, I'm pretty sure. We still follow each other on Instagram, and we talk once in a while. And I remember me trying to quit then at the hotel because I was just so afraid. My whole childhood, I was protected. And I was never allowed to, like, live life. So all I knew was my family.
Yeah.
And when I get to the hotel, now I'm, like, going all the way from one side to the coast to the other side, it was frightening. So I remember this girl. She wiped my tears and was like, we got this. And it was a shocker going on the plane. I was super scared. But when I got there, it was still a shocker. Yeah, I didn't know what I got myself into. All I remember is, like, I got to scream loud because my English is not that good. My heart was beating pretty fast. And especially female jungle instructors are pretty scary. I remember meeting them. And I remember, like, the whole speech of a jungle instructor was, I can't even tell you, because my mind was like, oh, shit, we're about to get fucked up. That's what I was thinking. So, and then my drill instructor, one of my drill instructors, her name was Sergeant Moore, and she was like a fucking ninja. So, like, that day when we met him and they, you know, they do the whole Black Friday thing, I was like, oh, fuck. It was shocking. But I liked it. Later on, I liked it, but not at the moment. I got used to the routine, and by the second month, you kind of get used to it. But at the moment, I was very grateful to be there because the food was amazing. I didn't grow up very rich. Mm-hmm. So, like, my dad used to work all the time, but we only ate what we could. And then, you know, going to boot camp was kind of like a blessing sometimes because, you know, the food was, I thought it was pretty good. People say it's not, but I thought it was pretty good. Except for the MREs. Everybody could, like, admit to MREs fucking suck.
Yeah.
But the food was pretty good. After you get, how do you say, used to the routine, then I was perfectly fine. The only thing, I mean, I feel like I suck at is true. Like, I couldn't, yeah. That one thing that I will always remember is when my drill instructor hyped us up for final drill, she put this song, and it was Bottles Up. And I just remember, like, feeling like, at that point, I felt, like, so confident in myself, and I felt like, damn, like, I have made these young ladies, like myself, and made sisters, and my drill instructors were mentors to me. So, like, it was amazing. When she put that song to hype us up, it was a great feeling to know that I had a second family. I used to not really talk a lot because of my English, but going through boot camp, and I know a lot of people are like, oh, it's cheesy. It is cheesy, but I remember passing boot camp and seeing people who didn't pass boot camp. And just me knowing that I made it without my family help, it was me, myself, and I, and then obviously the people that were around me, made my confidence so much bigger that I didn't care if I had an accent or if I misspell a word or if I say some shit and it was the wrong way, I'll be like, you understand what I said.
Yeah.
And I walked a lot taller. Like, I used to hunch over and, you know, because that's not, you know, you're not confident in yourself. But when I became Marine, that stopped. I felt like, even until this day, like, I feel like there's nothing that I can't do or I won't try. My first duty station was Okinawa. I used to think that was my very first, like, favorite duty station. But, you know, my last one, I felt like it was my favorite duty station. Okinawa was, for me, it was great. It was amazing. Obviously, when I got when I got told that I was going to Okinawa, it was scary. Again, yeah, I'm all about family, so I thought that I was going to come back to California. And I remember calling my dad, and I was like crying hysterically because, like, you know, I got orders to Okinawa. And all I remember my dad telling me, listen to what you're telling me. You're going to Japan. You're going to Okinawa. In a million years, will I be able to do that for you? Mm-hmm. You get to explore. You get to live life. So stop crying and just go. So when I got to Okinawa, I thankfully went with one of my really good friends. He's still my friend to this day. We went to the schoolhouse together, and then we went to Okinawa together. So it was less scary because I knew somebody. But as soon as we got there, Okinawa is so much different than, I believe, other duty stations, because all you have is each other. So you learn that part of camaraderie very early. Because when a new PSH checks in, you got to show them the way. You got to show them the do's and don'ts. The liberal risk thing, like, you can't. Especially when you check in, you can't do anything for 30 days because you need to learn the regulations, especially being in another country. I had this corporal. Her name was Zaya. She passed away recently, about maybe three years of cancer. And she was great. She was awesome. The moment I check in, she like guided me through everything. She didn't let me be by myself. Being in a different country. The unit itself, me learning going into the Marine Corps, I felt like it was great because they teach you how to take care of one of another. So like when she did that for me, then the new Marine, now it's my turn to do that for my younger Marines.
Hey.
And I felt like it was a great unit. But it was also like a great environment where I worked. So I remember in the Philippines, we went out on Livol, and that's when it made me realize to be thankful for being in America, right? Philippines is kind of like Mexico, not really, but it's kind of the same, right? And I remember going in this taxi with my friends, and I remember the driver was trying to sell his wife and kids to us. And that was shocking. But obviously, you're in a third world country, like, they're trying to make money. And that to me was shocking. It was like, oh, I got my wife. If you give me $20, you could do whatever. And I got daughters too. You give me $20, you could do whatever. And we're like, oh, no, no, no. Like, we're fine. We don't want that. We don't need that.
Wow.
But that's a shocker. But I understand, like, even in any street that you go in the Philippines, it's sad because you get to see how, like, poverty really is over there. And it makes you think about, you know, stuff that we get to get for granted here. And yeah, that was a shocker. I think that the biggest lesson that I got from Okinawa is how to take care of Marines because of how I was taken care of. I think my favorite part is giving somebody the opportunity to be able to do the same thing that I'm doing.
Yeah.
So like going recruiting duty. My very first time, I didn't choose to go recruiting duty. I wanted to be a drone shifter. I feel like most of us, we see a drone shifters and we try to like be like them. That was me when I was a sergeant. I wanted to be a drone shifter. But then I got histed. I waited too long to put my package in. And since I got histed, it was up to the Marine Corps. And the Marine Corps chose recruiting. I had a hard time dealing with that.
Hey.
When I initially got my orders. And, but after it, it's either I do the job or I get out. I do have an option. So I decided, well, I'm going to do the job because regardless, you know, at some point I feel like, you get options and people don't think that you do, but you do. Like when you get histed, some people don't want to do an SCA. But they still take the attitude to the SDA. Like, I don't want to fucking be here. So they take the attitude. I decided not to take the attitude. I was fucking angry about it. But at the end of the day, it's a job. My first time, it was San Diego. Yeah. Escondida. That was my very first time. It was shocking, too, because you go you go to BRC, they teach you how to talk to people and, you know, how to not be so military to people. Because obviously, like, a 17-year-old kid is not going to understand, you know, how you talk to regular Marines. You're just like, hey, I need this, 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 and it gets done. For a kid, is like, they don't know what a sergeant is. They don't know what a staff sergeant is. They don't know none of that. All they know is, sometimes they don't even know what branch you're in. So sometimes they call you Army. And that's what I'm saying. Like, they don't know. So, like, they send you to this kind of like a course to learn how to die. But that doesn't even do it for you sometimes. For me, I was very military, I would say, brainwashed. Yeah. You know, like, you tell me what you need to get done, and I'll do it. You tell me when, what, whatever, you know, the 5 W's.
Yeah.
And I do it. When it came to recruiting me, nobody knows how to do that because it has to be your own personality, the way that you talk to people. So it's a little bit different. I've been in the Marine Corps at that time. My first time, I've been in the Marine Corps for 8 years or 7 years, And it was frustrating that a 17-year-old kid wouldn't even say good morning to me. And coming off of being a sergeant, you know, like, sergeant is the backbone of the Marine Corps. I was a sergeant. And being in charge of Marines, and, like, you just expect this type of level of respect because you make shit happen. And then coming on to talking to a 17-year-old, 16-year-old kid that has no respect towards you, towards teachers, towards nobody. It was a culture shock. My very first couple of months, it was rough because I didn't understand why. Like, why kids are like that. But as I was getting into recruiting duty, I realized that they don't owe me anything because I'm just another military member coming in by. It wasn't until I realized that they're just regular people and I needed to talk regularly so they can understand my language. And that's when I'm telling you that was, I feel like my purpose was to help somebody change their life. I felt so good when I was able to take somebody from a really shitty situation and then give them the opportunity to join the Marine Corps. And not only opportunity, because some of these kids, like, you have to work in order for them to enlist, because it's not easy to enlist. Some kids like me, I was fucking easy, done deal. But some struggle with something, either asthma, your physical test, or whatever the case may be. But it was rewarding to see these kids in the Marine Corps later on and knowing that they're doing good. We had this girl who was in a house with a bunch of people. She was not homeless, but basically homeless. And she got kicked out of her home for the last 2 weeks of her, like, departing to boot camp. And I just remember that she was living in her car. And the whole office, were buying her groceries for the last 2 weeks before she departed to boot camp. And now that girl owns her own house, has a family, and is doing so much better. Before going on recruiting duty, my brother was diagnosed with cancer. And that was a big, take back from me, because I didn't know how my command was going to take it and if I needed to get out, because it was a time consuming of what was happening to my brother. But I think that probably took me to the darkest days of my life, because he had surgery, and we didn't know if he was gonna make it. And all I remember is my command being so supportive. And when he got out of surgery, he was fine, but then he had to get chemo and radiation. And it got to the point where I couldn't take care of him. My parents couldn't be there emotionally or physically because they never been through anything like that, especially with the kid. And not a kid, he was like, at the time he was 21 years old, but he's my little brother, so I call him kid. And at the time, my parents couldn't bear the emotion of being there for him. So like I was basically left with him. And it got to the point where I couldn't take care of him. So I had to take him to a facility, a hospice facility. And he hated it there. And I was still working. Like I still had a job to do. And it was super hard to continue to do my job as a Marine and then try to be emotionally there for him. And I remember getting these texts from him that he felt like he wasn't loved because my mom left him. My dad wasn't there, like, supportively. And he was left at that facility. So my thoughts there, like, I need to get out of the Marine Corps because I need to be there for him. And I don't even know how I did it, but at the time, I wasn't ready to get out either. I wasn't set for the future. Like, at that time, I didn't finish school, like, nothing. So it would have been a disaster if I would have got out and then having to take care of him. And then I just remember this text messages that I used to get, like, at 2 a.m. of him saying that he wanted to kill himself. And I just went over a few times. I got in my car and drove over there. And it was like he was getting, this facility was in Palm Desert. I used to work in Camp Pendleton. So I used to drive from Camp Pendleton to that facility to calm him down and whatever I needed to do and then come to work. And I was very close, like I was very close-minded of people helping me. And that command really kind of opened my eyes to, like, there is people out there for you. There is help for you. And I think I got through all that because of the people that I was working with. Mm-hmm. And then the leadership that I had there. I don't think if I had that, I don't think I would have made it. So sometimes when I used to, like, go do the radiation with my brother or like that, they wouldn't. Like, I didn't have no leave days. Or didn't have a lot of leave days. So, like, they would let me just go do it and take care of him. They wouldn't ask questions. They just, like, hey, can you just let us know you're alive? And that's what I did. Sometimes they will talk to me, even though, like, I wouldn't talk back. But they will, like, say, like, stuff that I needed to hear. And it was just nice. Because I was not a very open person. Like, I hate talking about my life and, like, what I go through. But that time, it was really rough that even if I didn't talk about it, they probably could tell. He finally beat cancer, and he's in remission. But now it's another fight because I feel like at a very young age, he was taking the opportunity to live life. And he won the fight, but he cannot let that go. So now it's like more of a mental thing. And since I feel like kind of like I enable a lot of stuff that he doesn't. Right. I feel like sometimes it's my fault because, like I said, I used to run whenever he used to text me or like I used to drop food or Uber food or whatever I needed to do. He got used to that. And now that he has a fighting chance, it's been like almost 5 years since that happened. He's still living in that stage where he needs everybody else to take care of him. And the reason is because he was very little when we were going through what my family is going through. And when I joined the Marine Corps, I took care of him. I made sure that he didn't miss anything, that he had everything he needed. And I think all of us just baby him. So when cancer hit him, he never been through anything rough that now he can't get out of it. Because this is the roughest thing that he ever had. He stayed with me for a little bit. And then I couldn't take care of him because he kept calling the cops. He kept calling the ambulance. And like, again, I'm very close-minded. So I told my mom to come live with me. She didn't want to come live with me. And it got to the point where he called the cops one time. And he decided in his head that he didn't need him. So the cops went inside. They broke my door. And obviously to make sure that he was okay. And I almost got in trouble because he obviously can't stay by himself at that point. I had to send him with my mom. And it hurt me because I've been taking care of him for so long that I felt like I failed him. But at that, I'm 1-on-1. It's not like my parents are there or like my siblings. So at that point, when I sent him off, I felt bad, even though like I'm sending him off to my mom. But that's the toughest thing I think I ever been through. I went back to the fleet. And I love supply. I love supply. But I felt like I felt so fulfilled helping somebody get a chance. Like I was helping Marines and I love my job. I do all that. But I felt like there was something missing. And as crazy as it sounded, I went back at it again. And that's why I'm doing it again. These kids have rough lives. Rough lives. And it's, I still haven't seen the fulfillment because the fulfillment is them becoming Marines. But some of them that had amazing stories. We just had a no shit, legit homeless kid went to boot camp. Wow. And when we picked him up, like he had one bag of like clothes. And when I dropped him off to the hotel, all he was asking is, boot camp gonna get me food? And I'm like, yes. Is it going to give me a place to stay? Yes. So some of these kids have amazing stories. Some of them obviously joined for a bigger purpose. Some of them needed this. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I was one of those that needed it at the time. For me, I was very involved in their lives. I was very involved after. Even now, I still get phone calls. Even if they get out the Marine Corps, they get NJP. You name it. I still get a phone call saying like, hey, Sergeant Garcia, like, this is what's going on with my life, or I just got NJP for this. How do I do this? How, what can I do? And that's how I know, like, I had a bigger purpose.
Yeah.
I came in the Marine Corps when the flex arm hang was still a thing. So we were doing the flex arm hang instead of the pull-ups. And then they started introducing pull-ups. And obviously, I was physically fit, like, at the beginning of my career. But when they started introducing pull-ups, it was like, there's a lot of shit talking about females that we have pull-ups and they're never going to do pull-ups and, like, all these things. And for me, it's more of a pride thing because it's like, I believe that if you put your mind to it, like, you could do anything. And whenever they started introducing the pull-ups, I was like, okay, well, this is a new standard. Let me just go ahead and get with it. And I started training my body. It took me a while to get where I'm at right now, but I done it. Physical fitness is very important to me because not only am I in the Marine Corps, but I'm also a personal trainer and a coach, a CrossFit coach. That's like stuff that I do on the side. But it's very important to me because I feel like it helps you with your mental health. Like, I was battling, you know, depression with my brother. I've been through a divorce. It was a lot of stuff that I was going through when I was recruiting. And the only thing that was constant was me working out. That was like one consistent thing that I could control over the days. And like every day I wake up in the morning because I want to start my day at least what I could control. And it just became a thing now that even when I'm like sad, depressed, or angry, or whatever, I go for a run, I work out. It is more like a mental thing for me than, oh, I care about my physical fitness. I do care, but it's mostly to keep myself sane. So I started doing band pull-ups. So like I started with the band. And then I started doing jumping pull-ups. And then little by little, it just kept accumulating. And then me like learning about the body, and then me getting my personal training and my CrossFit. Then I started realizing like what's the best possible way. And everybody's different. Like what works for me doesn't work for everybody. But I have a better understanding of my body that I know what I need to do in order for it to do something else. So originally, no, I couldn't do pull-ups. And I like I always tell people, because they see the videos on Instagram, they're like, oh, damn, she's a beast. Like it took me years to get where I'm at. And it was consistency where like that's where I'm at. The only thing that I'll say to everybody is, one, like, we're in the military, right? And a lot of people either do it to get a stepping stone or serve their country or whatever the case may be. For me, I originally was like, I wanted to get the benefits out of it. But I feel like when you become a Marine, it becomes bigger than that. Bigger than, you know, than just getting the benefits. But I would say the benefits are there, right? And I understand. I take pride of serving my country. But there are benefits to doing this job. And I recommend to every veteran, every person that's transitioning out, to use those benefits because you earn them. They were not just given to you. You had to sacrifice how many times, how many years you've been in the service, but I recommend everybody to use those benefits. And just how we tell these kids, obviously, look up into opportunities. The Marine Corps, fortunately enough, sets everybody, I feel like it sets everybody for success. Now, a lot of people, they're like, oh, it doesn't, this and that. But there's only so much people can do, right? If I get a book and tell you like, hey, here's this book, it's going to make you successful. Read it. Now it's your choice to read that book so you can become successful. That's what the Marine Corps does when you're transitioning out. Here are these opportunities for you to be successful. It's up to you to actually get the opportunities and actually use them.
Right.
So I would recommend people that we're all prideful to serve our country, and as you should be, but also just know that you didn't serve this country for nothing.
Well, thanks for being here, Letty. Really appreciate you sharing your story with Urban Valor.
Thank you.
Semper Fi.
Yeah, I got bad thoughts that make my mind scared. Hold me hostage and they don't fight fair. Who gon' pray for me and wipe on my tears? Who gon' save me if you not right here? Move this darkness and make my sight clear. Take me away cause I don't like here. Ghost of my past, they fill in the night air. Wake me up, I'm trapped in my nightmares.